Happy Thursday. It's the Ira Kaufman podcast starring the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. There he is, the Pro Football Hall of Fame voter representing the Tampa Bay area, the only one. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. The podcast is back, Ira, today, Thursday, in its normal form. A little tweak this week, but the people enjoyed listening back to Mr. Duffner. But how are you today?
Well, I'm still in a funk. It's 4 days later. I was so depressed, I had to drive 3.5 hours to Daytona Beach for a little quick vacation during the bye week. Lee, I looked out at the Atlantic Ocean. I almost felt like Bruce Dern at the end of Coming Home. I was going to walk into the water and let the waves wash over me and try to wash away the stink from Sunday. Now, Lee, you were there in person. I wasn't. I don't think it looked any better from the press box than it did from my living room. Let's just say this. About 7 minutes into the game, I turned to my wife and said, "They're wide open. They're running wide open." It was sort of the opposite of the Arizona game last year, where I turned to my wife after about 4 minutes and said, "Adrian Peterson might run for 400 yards. There's nobody in his way." And it was the same thing on the passing end on Sunday. Lee, any excuses for Sunday's performance? Any?
Zero. When you said you were wading into the water off the Atlantic, I was going to ask you if you saw Mike Smith's resume floating in the waters. It's a good thing that the newfangled Soldier Field, that they have the press box in the corner of the end zone, because it was anywhere close to the 50-yard line, I would have had to have a neck brace from all the touchdown passes. It had been like watching a tennis match, you know.
Were most of them coming your way into that end zone?
The opposite way. I guess it was about 10 minutes into the second quarter, I started writing. You know how it is when there's a blowout. Oddly enough, I was writing a story where I was going to stop just short of saying, "Mike Smith, we've seen enough, goodbye." And then I got an email from Mr. Isbitz here, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to write, Mike Smith should go." And, you know, as Steve wrote eloquently, Steve and I, we don't take that lightly. That's the only time we've ever asked for a coach to resign or be fired, or just to be removed.
Ira, before we get rolling and cooking on the podcast, it's presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. And, of course, you know their tremendous commitment to the community and all aspects of it. Drive for Hope is on now at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. All proceeds from Drive for Hope benefit My Hope Chest, which helps breast cancer survivors. Ed Morris will proudly donate a portion of the proceeds from every vehicle sold to My Hope Chest. Tens of thousands of dollars have been donated, Ira, over the years to this, many tens, and tremendous opportunity. The website's edmorriscadillactampa.com, edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. You know their commitment to the community out there, Ira. I know it always impresses you.
They're very involved in the community, not just selling cars. They think that their mission goes beyond that, and I think that's very commendable because not every business looks at it that way. They just want to make their money and rake it in and not give anything back to the community. I think Ed Morris deserves some kudos for this.
Absolutely. Kind of like Ira Kaufman Enterprises. That's how you operate. You just want to give me my check. Now, I'm teasing you, Ira. You've done a lot of great things. You know, actually, I got another email the other day. They're looking for you at the Lakeland Rotary.
I've already agreed to it.
You've agreed to it. Donating your time. I told them they had to feed you, though.
And I did the Tampa Sports Club a couple of months ago.
I know you are out there, but Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon right there, Causeway Boulevard. Start your car shopping there. Fantastic, Ira. You know what's in now? I love looking at their websites and seeing those 2019s. They're just a little extra special, a little extra juice.
Hey,
when I'm
on my way to that Lakeland club, I might stop off in Brandon and see the Ed Morris showroom.
The amazing XT4 is in stock and ready for immediate delivery. Unbelievable, Ira. Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon.
The post-game environment, Lee, you went in there. You stay extra when Cutter goes in. You stay in the locker room, which I think is smart. Because you can get some players that nobody else gets. Would you say it was more embarrassment or shock or a combination?
Of those options, shock, I would say morgue. It really looked like I walked into a wake. This may sound morbid, and I apologize, but I remember when I was in college, a good friend of mine, his father was killed in an accident, and I went to the wake, and I just saw the staring into space at nothing. that was what Levante David looked like. That's what Donovan Smith looked like. That's what Caleb Benlock. Although, of course, Caleb Benlock, you know, he could have been some kind of flashback from all the guys running past him.
Lee, from the defensive players, did you hear the magic word? The word that drives Buck fans up a wall.
Communication?
Miscommunication. Did you hear it?
No, I did not. But it was interesting. There were three players that were just, I mean, shell shocked. That's the best way I can describe it. Caleb Benlock and Donovan Smith had both their lockers were next to each other. They just sat there and stared. They just, like, and I used the ugly analogy earlier. Levante David was the same way, although he was by himself. He was the last one to take his uniform off. He may have been lucky to catch the bus to the airplane or to the airport. He just sat there for the longest time in his full uniform without the helmet, of course, just staring.
You know, you were watching the game like I was. Wasn't there a shot of Levante David and Gerald McCoy sort of standing together on the sidelines with a very bewildered look, and they were talking to each other? Steve, what do you think that conversation might have been? And I think it was the second half. You know, the game was totally out of hand.
Ira, for the listeners, I've been scurrying around for the last 3 minutes looking for my pen. I'm lost in this podcast without my famous pen.
Steve, what were they talking about Mike Smith at that point? Were they talking about the scheme?
I don't know what they were talking about, Ira, but I do know this. Levante David, 7 consecutive years now, he has been on the field. Other Bucks have not been because of injuries. He's been on the field for 7 consecutive historic September beatings. He's been on the field for every single one.
That was a good nugget you guys came up with the other day, the September beatings.
He's got to be wondering, what the heck's going on? This happens every single year, and it's not an exaggeration for him.
You're talking about the Ravens game?
No, that was October. You go back every single year that Levante David's been in the league, they've been clobbered.
In Atlanta? Years ago?
I could run them down for you, Ira, but you know, it starts in 2012, right? Historic September beating. They went up to the Giants, and Eli Manning throws for 500-something yards.
The Bucks scored a lot of points in that game.
They did, but it was a historic loss in the way that they lost.
I think he threw for 510.
And the Giants scored 25 points in the fourth quarter.
Yes.
So that's historic.
The Jets.
The next year, Levante David's on the field for that brutal Jets loss, but 2 weeks later, it ends the Josh Freeman era. They score 3 points in New England, and they get blown out. Every single year, there's another game, and, I mean, David, McCoy, you know, the year after that, 2014, McCoy was injured, but that's when they got down 56-0 to Atlanta after 3 quarters.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's...
In prime time. Yeah.
When you needed the game, you know, it's terrible. So, I don't know what's going on with this, but it's over now. And I got to say, I don't know if I'm in the minority because it's hard. I mean, the angry Bucks fans or the enraged Bucks fans are out there, but I really don't feel too badly about the team. I really don't. Or maybe I'm crazy. 2-2, everybody and their brother would have been happy with that a month ago. I'm happy with it. And the offense is healthy. Jameis is coming back. He's healthy. He got a chance to shake the rust off. And they got the bye at just the right time, in my opinion. And you know what? The defense can't play any worse.
Lee,
so it's all straight up from here.
I understand his points. But if you would have lost the first two and won the last two, you feel a lot different.
Sure.
Within the 2-2, you know, there's a different dynamic. But Steve just said it at the end. Like, defense can't play any worse. Well, you just lost your last two games because the defense didn't stop anybody. Although the Pittsburgh game, some of it was self-inflicted. No question. I can't blame Fitzpatrick and the offense for Sunday. Yeah, the offense wasn't very good, Lee.
They're out of the game
400 yards and 38 points. I mean, that's the story of the game. Yeah, let's not talk about receivers that Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't hit or pressures from Khalil Mack. I mean, that's crazy. That game was a defensive embarrassment. There's no excuses for it. You're playing Mitch Trubisky, a bunch of receivers nobody's ever heard of.
Well, I have heard of Allen Robinson, actually.
They keep getting you into these mismatches with Tariq Cohen, and you never adjust to it. Guys are running wide open. That's the story of the game. Now, Lee, do you have any confidence that this defense is going to straighten out after the bye week?
No. I mean, you know, Steve says defense can't get any worse. Well, that's a relative term because they're on pace to allow the most points in NFL history. So when you say it can't get any worse, I don't know how to respond to that. It's as bad as it gets. but at any rate, if Aaron Rodgers did it, you're like, okay, it's Aaron Rodgers. Drew Brees, it's Drew Brees. Although he basically did do that for the season opener. Just my old saying, winning is the best perfume. But Mitch Trubisky, he had, nine touchdowns in his NFL career?
And 10 picks.
Yeah, he has 66% of that in three quarters.
And Steve, here's my bigger point about the defense, and I think this is the key point. It's not just the Bears game. It's not just the Arizona game. It's not just the Vikings game.
Or
the game Saints. At New Orleans. Yeah. It's 3 years running, with the exception of a five-game stint in 2016. So, we're talking about 36 games, and five games out of those 36, it looked like they had something going. And even, Steve, even at the end of that year, and you and I disagree on that, they went into Dallas, they went into New Orleans. I thought the defense stunk. You said, well, the offense didn't do much either. All right, we could both be right about that. But I didn't think the defense played well at all in Dallas when they were 8-5. 8-5. And had their playoff destiny in their own hands that night. They hung in there. It was a game they could have won in the fourth quarter. They didn't. But, Steve, to my point, this has been going on for the most part for 3 years. It's not just the Bears game. That's what I'm saying. That's why the fans are up in arms.
Well, I get it. I mean, I'm up in arms too. I don't like watching historic beatings. I don't enjoy that, Ira. But I just think it needs a little perspective, and you could put some perspective on it in a few different ways. The Bucs are capable of playing better defense. Look, if you want to play ancient history games, the second half of that 2016 season, the entire second half, they allowed 17 points a game. The whole second half, not just a five-game stretch. They shut out the Steelers in the second half of the game 2 weeks ago, so they're certainly capable. The Steelers weren't letting off the gas
They might have let off the gas.
Well, the Bucs made it close. They weren't letting up all the way to the end. They almost lost the game, the Steelers.
Is the talent that bad, Steve? Is it a question of talent in your mind?
Well, sure. It's partially talent. You got a third-string safety out there, but it's way more than talent because it's just such a train wreck, and there's still good players on the field. I think you're letting the offense way off the hook on that game, Ira. I'm sorry.
They weren't going to win that game, though, Steve. They weren't going to win that game.
No, they weren't going to mount a massive comeback, but you got to show something. Look, Chicago's playing soft defense in the second half. We put up 7 points with all those weapons in the second half. And this game was 14-0 with the Bucs in the red zone. And they give it to Ronald Jones twice in a row. That's his debut in the red zone. What are you doing? I don't know. I didn't like the offense. Even Cutter had a chance to take back what he said about everybody deserved to be off that field and look to be positives. He wasn't giving kudos to the O-line and
nor should he have.
To his quarterbacks and all that stuff. He said, sure. He said, Jameis did some nice things. But the offense, we've seen them get blown out and then rally back. This time they got blown out and rolled over. And that's bad.
For the season, I'm not talking about what happened at Soldier Field. For the season, 76, 77% completion rate, last in the league in defense. And repeat it again, Lee. What are they on pace for defensively? Say it again. They've been playing football in this league for 100 years. Next year is the 100-year anniversary of the National Football League. What did you say about what they're on pace for?
Most points allowed in NFL history.
One more time, Lee.
Most points allowed in NFL history.
And Isbitz wants to talk about Caleb Benenock missing a block on Khalil Mack. Come on, Isbitz. You're better than that.
All right, Ira, look. Come on, man. Let's calm down. You know how many more points per game they're allowing than the Falcons? Four. And that's the team they play next. So the schedule lays out for them. The Falcons have a horrible defense.
Yeah, because they're missing their best linebacker, one of the best in the league.
Okay, I don't care about who they're missing.
And their best safety, right. One of the best in the league.
Sure.
And what are the Bucs missing?
You don't think Chris Conte's one of the best in the league?
Next question.
No, seriously, but look, I'm talking
You're
about...
You're right, the Falcon defense.
Falcons are horrible. They're 1-3 with a terrible defense.
That's why the Bucs might have a chance next week.
And a defensive coach. Well, I know how Mike Smith's defenses are in domes, so I'm not getting excited. I'm going to say this, and we'll get into this later, more detailed, but to expect the Bucs to keep up a pace of their defense, for example, again, their defense is giving up like 35 points a game, I believe. So you have to expect the offense to score 36 points to keep up. I looked it up. Only twice has that happened in the NFL, an offense to average 36 points a game. So the Bucs, I mean, it's unrealistic on both levels. It's unrealistic.
Steve, my main point, you know, going forward, and we'll wrap up Sunday's game, but, Steve, the passes weren't contested. They weren't contested. The guys are so open, and he had so much time on a few of them, like a couple of those Tariq Cones. He beat, you know, going down the right sideline and beat the linebacker. That's a slow developing play. You know, the pass rush is a main culprit too. You know, they sack him once and hit him three times. Steve, unacceptable.
Guys
running wide open. Why are they so open, Mr. Isbitz? Why are they so open?
Ira, look, it was a complete breakdown, and that's why Lee and I called for the firing of Mike Smith. There was no excuse. There was no adjustment. This was not a good offense. The Bears aren't going to go out and rip somebody apart next week with their dynamic offense. It's not going to happen. I don't go back to all the history stuff. Look, Mike Smith failed last year. And the reason we played in the last podcast, if anybody didn't listen, we replayed the Mark Duffner interview talking about how the whole coaching staff broke down the defense to its core elements in the winter.
Brutal honesty.
Brutal honesty. They built it back up from the ground up. They had players teaching it to each other in the spring to get them more invested, all that stuff. You know, Duffner detailed this. And so they did the whole big, massive self-scout, and it's worse. So that is an indictment of coaching. Look, they didn't blitz against the Bears, which is mind-numbing, and they couldn't cover anybody, and they couldn't adjust, and it just kept going and going. And it's the Bears. It's a disaster.
And they got at least two new starters up front. Pierre Paul's playing well.
Pierre Paul has played well.
You know, so that's a plus.
And Vinny Curry hasn't played bad. And if I recall correctly, I haven't looked at the stats. I'm going off the top of my head. Don't JPP and Curry account for all the sacks?
McCoy's got one and a half, I think.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy, I had come up from the Bucs locker room, the morgue, that's what it was, and I'm banging on my keyboard, and thank you, Chicago Media Relations. They rebroadcast Matt Nagy's full interview on the intercom, and I overheard Nagy say, I only caught part of it, where I'm paraphrasing, yeah, we knew what Mike Smith was going to do. We knew what the Bucs were going to do. So I wait for the quotes.
That is quite an indictment.
Yeah, when the quotes come out, it was even more damning. Like, whoa, you know, Nagy's basically said he knew how Smith was going to react each and every play. That is, like you said, that's an indictment. And then Chris Sims, former Bucs quarterback, one of only six quarterbacks to get to the Bucs in the postseason, if you can believe that.
There you go.
He said on his podcast that he played against Mike Smith when Smith was defensive coordinator at Jacksonville. He said he's doing the exact same thing today as he did that back then. Exact same thing. And he says offensive coordinators know it, opposing coaches know it. And that's why the Bucs are getting lit up. There's a book out on him.
Well, we're focusing on the defensive line for a moment and give Pierre Paul his props. And you saw how hacked off he was on the sidelines.
Now, I didn't see that, but I saw how hacked off he was in the locker room.
While we're on that subject, it behooves us. There's your word.
That's a good word.
It behooves us, Mr. Isbitz, to discuss the plight of one Noah Spence. And by plight, I mean when the guy dresses, he can't get on the field. Most of the time, he doesn't even dress. They're down Bo Allen. They're down Mitch Unrein. He can't get on the field, Mr. Isbitz.
What are you getting in my face for, Sage?
Why is he on the team, Steve? He can't get on the field. Right. Are you going to tell me because he can't play special teams?
You know, I'm going to drop this on you. Who cares? The guy's not playing this first quarter of the season. He's not part of the problem. He's not part of the solution. He's been inactive twice. He's got like five snaps. I don't care about him anymore. There's something going on. They're not going to tell us.
Are you using the B word or it's too premature?
How could it be too premature to call him a bust? He's in third year. He can't play. Will Clark's playing ahead of him. Ryan Nassib, Brown's cast
Will
off.
Golston.
It doesn't mean, are those your Nassib and Clark? That's all you need to know.
Yeah. It's the 21st century version of Lewis and Clark. You got Clark who pulled off the street, and you got a Browns reject. A guy who couldn't make a team, a winless team. And so there you go. I mean, that's all you got to say about
non-issue. Non-issue. You know, maybe they give him some time. Maybe he gets six snaps and can shine, or I don't know what's going on. Who cares?
I like Ira's facial reaction. He said, who cares, Ira? But I will say this. I'm going to go out and say this and go on a limb, say what you will about me. I like Noah Spence. I feel sorry for him in a lot of ways. I really do. No matter who's coaching, no matter who the GM is next year, I don't think he's on the roster.
He could be out of football next year. Steve, could be out of football.
No, I read that.
Look, if he can't get in the game soon, he needs to be traded at the deadline. Somebody will take a flyer on him for a seventh-round pick, and that's it. I mean, what else are you doing here?
Think about this, Ira. You enjoy me repeating this, that the Bucs are on pace to have the most points allowed in NFL history. And Noah Spence can't dress.
Not bad.
Can't get on the field.
Speaking of trading, you don't think there's any chance that the Bucs are thinking about dealing Fitzpatrick at this point for a sixth-round draft pick, do you, Steven?
Well, the only deal you need, Ira, is for your tickets at fanretreat.com. Now, Lightning open up on Saturday. That's the home opener, Ira. That's the season opener. You can get Lightning tickets, all your NHL, baseball, football tickets, college, pros at fanretreat.com. Excellent, superior secondary ticket outlet, but it's a one-stop shop. You get your airline tickets if you want to catch them on the road, get your hotels, rent a cars, fanretreat.com. Use your Joe Bucks fan discount code. That gets you a discount only on tickets, but it's a strong discount on their already low prices for tickets. Bucks tickets are there. You can shop them against your other big names in the secondary outlet. Instant download of tickets.
Elton John's coming to town, Lee. I know
is that right?
Yeah, Elton John will be
Amalie Arena. I can see you in one of those wigs that John wears.
With the big glasses?
Yeah, that's you.
this is a farewell tour, isn't it?
Yeah, just like Paul Simon was a farewell tour.
Which means he'll be touring next year when he wants more money. It's usually what it means. Yeah. But seriously, Ira, fanretreat.com, all your Bucks tickets. Right there. You know, you can shop the night before, you get a good deal. Looks like ticket prices might not be in great demand for the Bucks and going forward.
We saw Sean in New Orleans. Good guy, and he knows what he's doing.
Florida-owned company, fanretreat.com. Now, I don't know about this Ryan Fitzpatrick stuff. You sure? Somebody might call Jason Light and say, hey, look, our quarterback's down, or we want a better backup. What do you got for Fitz? The Bucks are crazy to get rid of Fitzpatrick.
Crazy.
Crazy.
If you're 0-4, you entertain it. If you're 1-3, you might entertain it. Not 2-2.
Well,
suppose you're 6-5, and Winston goes down for a couple of games. Well, you look like a clown.
We'll talk crazy here. I put this on Twitter, and I was half tongue in cheek. I'm about ready to say, I think there's a scintilla possibility this could occur.
Don't tell me you think there's going to get a premium pick for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Chucky calls Light.
What are you going to get, though? What are you going
to
get?
Chucky's crazy enough to give up a second-round pick for Fitzpatrick.
I think that is crazy. I think that is crazy.
If Chucky calls up and says, I'll give you a second-day draft pick for Fitzpatrick, Light's crazy for not pulling the trigger.
But, Lee, nobody wanted Fitzpatrick to be a starter 2 years ago or 1 year ago.
That's why you sell high. That's why you sell high. Now, here's another one. Here's another one,
Steve,
for you.
Is there any,
I'd
Steve,
agree
is
with...
There some, is there something in Lee's coffee today? What is going on? A second-round pick for Fitzpatrick?
I'm saying in the real world, no, but Chucky doesn't live in the real world.
Help me.
Chucky's
here, Steve,
crazy.
Help me.
I'd agree with Lee, except the Raiders just put up 45 points the other week. So Chucky is got a win. He's feeling good about the offense. His press conferences are fantastic. I recommend anybody to watch them. So
and he's already working on driving the GM out of town. He's already working on it.
I think even Chucky's not that nuts, but it's possible. Look, what I'd love to see the Bucks do is offer Ryan Fitzpatrick a contract now for next year to be a backup, because he's an ideal backup. You could argue that he's been outside of Nick Foles the best backup in the league the last couple of years.
Well, but I don't know what my quarterback situation is at the top of the depth chart for 2019. Steve, it's still unsettled.
Does it matter? He's an excellent backup. If in your scenario, Ira, and we'll get to that, if you're speculating that Jameis isn't here, whoever is here, Fitzpatrick is obviously good for a young guy. He's been in all a bunch of different offenses. So I'd love to see him, talk to him about next year, but I don't see the value in trading. There's other guys. If you want to trade, you want a clean house on this team, there's other guys you can get rid of.
I just think, Steve, the timing's lousy, because 2-2, thanks in large part to Mr. Ryan Fitzpatrick, that they are 2-2. Let's give him credit for winning that opening week game almost single-handedly. When you give up 40 points and you still win the damn game on the road against,
first time in Bucks history,
against a division rival, I mean, you're 2-2. You're not in a hole. I'm agreeing with what you said before. You're not in terrible shape. You're 2-2. So why give up a valued backup when there's a chance that you're still in this thing in December, and if Winston goes down, you don't want to turn it over to a guy who's never thrown an NFL pass. Steve, that's my point.
You can't trade him now. You're 2-2. I agree.
Well, there's a couple things here. Maybe I'm the only one. I'm stuck on that, what the defense is on pace for. And there's no way they're going to have a winning record if that keeps up. And unfortunately, I don't have any faith in Mike Smith. I'm sorry. Now, did Cutter not say that he was one play away from pulling Fitzpatrick against the Steelers and putting Griffin in? That, and we all know here how often Cutter has talked up Griffin. Now, I don't know if it's hyperbole or not, but he's always talking him up.
When did he say that? When did he say that?
Ian Rappaport reported it, and I don't believe Ian Rappaport. So I'm just going to put that out there. He's lied.
Isn't
about
he the same guy that said there was a rift between Winston and Cutter?
In my opinion,
he
threw out BS about the Bucs, and I think he did
that,
it again.
That guy's wrong about 60% of the time. Lee, I'm not kidding.
I've talked to him about that Jameis story, the story last year. I talked to him one-on-one about that, and he didn't tell me who the source was. I told him who I thought the source was. He didn't disagree with me. And if you know who I think, I'm not going to say it, but again, we're rehashing old news here, but I have a damn good idea who tipped off Rappaport, and it's a fairly good source. But again, both Jameis and Cutter denied it, and I poo-pooed it only because NFL history, every quarterback has issues with his coach,
Steve,
at some point.
Is he saying that Cutter mulled it over at halftime? Is that his point?
The whole premise is stupid. I'm sorry.
When is he saying Cutter thought about it?
Ira, who cares what a coach thought about? What matters is what a coach does. Every coach will tell you, I think about every possible scenario. That's my job.
Well, I'm glad he stuck with him because they almost pulled the damn game out.
I mean, does anybody really think he was going to put in Ryan Griffin at halftime? Now, I could see when the game was totally out of hand, maybe two series later if they were down, but at halftime, you're going to...
Well, let's say Winston wasn't back for the Chicago game. Then you put Griffin in the second half. Nobody says anything if you're down 30.
Right, but we're talking Pittsburgh, and it's old. But I mean, come on. Okay, Ryan Griffin, you've never taken a snap. We'll throw you in Monday Night Football on a wet field with a team that blitzes nonstop. Have a good time. And we're losing by 30. Come on. Cutter's not... That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't buy Rappaport, and who told them that?
Anyway, I'm with you. I don't buy Rappaport either. I'm not buying it.
I don't buy it, but it might be true. I don't know, Sage. All right, now look, this Jameis thing, you went out there, Ira, you put it out there, and you typed it up, all your opinion. You put your foot down. You said Jameis 5-7.
Nothing I haven't said on this podcast.
No, but you typed it up. We all live in a real-time world. You typed it up. You said if Jameis goes 5-7, you're done with them. Franchise quarterbacks, they got to win games, enough already, and that's where you stand. So you left it open. Hey, if he goes 500, you're not done with him. If he wins, you're looking at locking this kid down. So that's where you stand. Anything change there, Sage? You want to explain yourself further?
Lee wants to tell me that he might throw for 3,500 yards in the next 12 weeks, and that's why I'm keeping Jameis Winston. And I say garbage yards. I'm not interested. Win some freaking games. Lee's going to tell me. I'm short-circuiting, Lee. You'll get your chance. Lee's about to tell me, what do you want the kid to do? He's got the worst defense in the world. He can't win games. Well, there are teams out there with lousy defenses that manage to win games. You can win some games.
What is some?
You can have a winning record with a bad defense if you're an outstanding quarterback. I'm not the only guy that says Jameis Winston is not in the upper echelon of NFC quarterbacks. This is year four. Shouldn't he be? Shouldn't he be in the upper echelon of NFC quarterbacks? So I'm not blaming Jameis Winston solely for the Bucs going 5-11 last year. But Lee, he's not a rookie anymore. The stakes are higher. I expect more out of him. And as Steve just said, go 7-5. Go get your money. Go 5-7. I'm moving on. The floor is yours, Mr. DeKemper.
I don't know where to start. Statistics show that he's a damn good quarterback. Maybe the most underrated, except for wins. Well, you could put Sandy Koufax in the 62 Mets. Would he have 12 wins? Probably not. To expect this team, for Jameis to carry a team that's on pace to set an NFL record, I know a broken record, but you enjoy hearing it. Most points allowed in NFL history, that's just irresponsible. That's to expect a winning record. I did the research last night. Only two times in NFL history has a quarterback ever led an offense that averaged 36 points a game? Manning with the Broncos, believe it or not, not the Colts. And Tom Brady. That's it.
Fitzpatrick just won a game when you gave up 40 points. Found a way to win it.
And it's unrealistic to expect that. Basically, what you're saying is Jameis and the offense have to score 40 points a game. That's basically what you're saying. That's that not only is unrealistic, it's irresponsible to say blame that on Jameis.
You're assuming this defense isn't going to improve one tick. One tick? Well, over the last 12 games?
Well, what's one tick? They're going to be they're going to be as worse as they were last year, but they won't set a record.
Steve, give the Kemper another minute of airtime, and he's going to say that Winston doesn't have enough targets.
No,
what's next, Kemper? You don't have enough guys to throw to?
I'm not saying Jameis is Drew Brees, okay? If that's the standard by your quarterbacks, that unless I got to have a Hall of Fame quarterback, I'm getting rid of him. Well, that's why the Bucs are why they are. This friggin' franchise has a hallmark of getting rid of good players, whether it be a kicker in Matt Bryant. We could sit here the rest of the morning and talk about all the good players that went on to start from NFL teams, if not win Super Bowls. And you're going to get rid of the best or the most important position on your team because the defense is garbage?
You want to stack up the cash for a guy who's going to be 23 and 34?
Well, think about this a moment. That's good for the Glazers. They're in a bargaining position. They can have that contract, all kinds of options.
And I haven't even mentioned any character issues. I don't talk about character issues.
That is more important to me than the on-field stuff.
I don't
stuff.
Even mention it.
That's more important to me, and that's why you have all kinds of behavior clauses in his contract. But this is maybe the way I always think, not just football, but all kinds of things. Flip the coin. Let's say you get rid of Jameis. What then? You really going to bang on Ryan Fitzpatrick?
What are you, cutter about Mike Smith now?
If you're the Glazers and you can't find – first off, good luck finding any kind of coach that wants to come in here with no quarterback. Good luck. I mean, you could probably promote Mark Duffner. He could probably take the job.
According to you, they're going 5-11, and they're going to have a strong draft pick, so you take a quarterback. You get the right quarterback. He wants – Steve, this man wants to lay the money down for a guy who's 23 and 34 with a character issue.
Are you going to lay the money down for Fitzpatrick?
Wait a minute.
No,
wait.
Of course not.
Well, if the guy's going to be a starting quarterback, he's going to get $20 million. It's that simple. We live in 2018.
I want the right guy. I want an upper
right
echelon
guy?
Quarterback.
Well, we all do. But, you know, I want to sleep with Kate Upton, too.
Well, let me.
I think we got a better chance of getting an upper echelon quarterback.
Let me referee here a little bit. The argument, okay, the argument Lee's making is that, and it drifted a little bit. I want to get to one of the drifts. But the argument is you can't grade Jameis just on wins if your defense is the worst in the league. It's illogical. And Lee actually said it's irresponsible. I already called you irresponsible. So that's the core of the argument. Now,
oh, look at him stewing here. He's pinching his nose.
Now, just on that alone, now you think about that for a minute. You think about that concept for a minute, Sage. Look at his face. I'm going to just comment on Lee. I think it doesn't give the Glazers any bargaining position. I'll disagree on that if this is the situation and Jameis loses and the defense is real bad, because all it takes is one other team to want you. And look at what happened with Kirk Cousins. Yeah. He made a fortune he played with the Redskins last year. They went 7-9 and they let up more points than they scored. But people watched him and said, you know what? This guy can lead an offense and we're going to pay him top dollar. So
yeah, he had lousy targets in Washington. He had bad targets.
This last year he did. Previous year he had DeSean Jackson.
They weren't too bad. He's got an elite tight end. He's got decent receivers.
Hurt. Be fair. That guy was hurt. All right, continue.
Anyway, yeah, I don't think Jameis would have – if he plays this season healthy and plays even slightly above average, he'll have a big market out there. At least, and a big market for anybody is two teams because – that's the market.
Now,
you know,
Steve,
right? Two,
on.
Two
I'm
teams
won.
So I don't think there's any
what
issue
about this factor?
With Jameis
if
moving
on. If
the
defense is that bad, they finish 6-10.
Then there's a new head coach.
Then there's a new regime.
Yeah.
They didn't draft Winston. What do you say to that, DeKemper? May not want Winston.
And you can also probably find guys that will want him because, you know, you have to break in a rookie.
Well, are you saying at that point the guy that the Glazers would hire to replace Cutter would have to be on board with Winston to get the job?
I could see that.
Is that possible?
Well, if the Glazers want Winston, but then you're looking at, okay, in this general scenario of doom and of doom, if the defense is unfixed, then you obviously need to put your resources into the defense. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have problems because a lot of the good players on this defense are old. JPP next year, 30. McCoy, Pat, 31. Grimes. I mean, those are three of your best defensive players. So you're going to need to invest resources, draft or whatever, on the defense. And maybe the Glazers look at all these young quarterbacks succeeding, if they do, in fact, succeed, and be like, well, you know what? Jameis was middle of the pack in the conference anyway. Let's go with a cheaper guy and put the resources elsewhere, and we'll trust the new coach to get whatever quarterback he wants. I don't know.
Let me throw this out at you, Lee. This offense is healthy. Steve mentioned that. It's healthy. Winston's healthy. Targets galore. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't they average 30 points? Shouldn't they?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
No.
The Rams averaged 30 last year with Jared Goff throwing a nobody. Now, yeah. They had Gurley,
and again, the Rams, I don't think we're putting a, oh, my God, we got to score 40 points.
You're going to compare Cooper Kupp to Mike Evans? Cooper Kupp?
No. Ira, you're the one who voted for Gurley as MVP. They have the MVP on the roster.
Robert Woods is better than DeSean Jackson?
They also had a defense.
But they averaged 30 points with Jared Goff. Come on now.
If you had a chance, just all things even, would you have Phillip Rivers as a quarterback?
Yes.
He's barely above 500. Wins and losses. I think 190. He's barely over 500, but he's played 13 seasons. Of those 13, 7 were winning seasons.
Well, if Winston was 500, I might think twice about giving him. I'm talking about him being 23 and 34.
Well, we also have to remember, unless I'm living in an alternative universe, and I probably am, he did win in 2006, thrown to the likes of Freddie Martino.
Rivers actually 108 and 88.
108 and 88.
So he's,
Steve, I'm talking about 23 and 34. That's my premise. 23 and 34. I'm not giving him the money. I'm not giving it to him.
I understand it, Ira. I understand it. But
I'm not saying he's going to be 23 and 34. I'm saying if he is.
It's hard to say that without really – you're saying it in advance of seeing what it looks like. Because they could – the point Lee's making is, again, playing referee, they could average 28 points a game.
Lee says they're not going to do it.
No, you said 30. You said 30. I said 30. And 30 is unrealistic. I mean, I think only – one team last year averaged 30. The Saints are always at like 29 point something. But if they average 28 points a game and they go 4-8, are you going to get rid of the quarterback?
That's a very specific scenario.
See, you were on Russo yesterday talking up Drew Brees as the top 10 quarterback.
Yes,
which I don't think is outrageous. I don't know if it's top 10.
Go ahead, Steve. What's Brees' career record while he's pontificating?
And he had three losing seasons in a row. You would have thrown him overboard. And you're on Russo's show talking about how he's a top 10 quarterback of all time.
Does he have a losing record career-wise?
Probably doesn't, but 7-9. You've been beating a chair, screaming for Sean Payton to get rid of him.
No, because during those years, he's averaging 28 points a game. And Jameis Winston's never done that. Never come close.
No, they're two different quarterbacks. It was a firm, harsh foot in the ground, Sage. We'll see if you waver and waffle.
What about the fact that Winston had these same targets last year? Same guys. And they didn't show up. We didn't see him. You're going to blame it all on a bum shoulder?
I would not say that at all. DeSean Jackson didn't show up.
Mike Evans had an average season.
1,000 yards.
A pedestrian season.
1,000 yards?
Pedestrian.
When did that become pedestrian? 1,000 yards per receiver.
Ira went into this previously. I think we looked it up. It was like 21 receivers were 1,000 yards
pedestrian
last year.
Pedestrian.
So for
a guy of his skill.
So basically it was sort of typical for a number one receiver to have 1,000 yards. And Evans, of course, was, I think, 1,002 yards, I think it was.
Barely.
How many times did he reach the end zone, Steve?
It was a average number one receiver year for Mike Evans because, again, the passing went up last year was 20-something guys. So I get it, Sage.
I'm not rooting against Jameis Winston.
You're greasing the wheels to get him out of here.
I'm not because I'm not saying he's going to go 5-7.
No.
Why should I think he's going to go 5-7?
So what do you think? All right, here you are, Sage. What's he going to do? What are the Bucks going to do?
That's a story for another podcast.
You think about that. No, seriously, I'm excited about where we are. I'm excited because look.
You're excited if you think the defense is going to improve.
No, forget about that, Ira. 2-2. We all would have been here, hey, it's high five in a month ago. And Jameis walks into what? He's healthy. The shoulder's fine.
But Steve, to Lee's point, you can't expect to win a shootout every week if the defense
Who's expecting
stinks?
To win every week? I don't expect them to win 8 in a row or 12 in a row. I don't expect them to win every week. I still think they're an 8-8-ish kind of team, 9-7 team.
You're excited because you think it's going to be exciting, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's going to be exciting with Jameis coming in. offensive line completely healthy. They've shown they can pass block.
I don't have
block.
Any goosebumps.
No, they...
Lee.
They've shown they can pass block.
Lee, I got not last week they sure couldn't.
No, but this year they have. And no one's going to win every week. That's my point.
An 8-8 record supposed to give Buck fans goosebumps?
No.
An 8-8 record?
Well, you know what? Given how standards have lowered these...
No, given how they're 2-2 after that brutal opening schedule, 8-8's disappointing. It's disappointing. Steve?
After I know. The 2-0 start, it's disappointing.
It
yes.
is. After the
but after the I think the last two games have been the cold slap of reality. I hate to say it.
I didn't say I was excited about 8-8, Ira. I just said I'm excited because Jameis is coming in here. Fourth year with the offense. He's completely healthy. He's shaking off the rust. He's not walking into injuries. Monken, he's got, you know, is a more aggressive coordinator. And the table is set for him to just light it up.
Go into Atlanta and score 35 points.
I'm going to say something that's, I hope that happens, but I don't, yeah. I'm going to say something that he's a great guy. We all love him. And I got a good story about this guy in the Chicago locker room. It's a great story. Allie Marpet's had a couple bad games in a row.
Yeah.
I hate to say it because I like the guy so much, but he's, you know, we were talking about how they showed the good pass block. Well, he's had a couple rough games.
Steve,
I hope that's not a trend.
You've been watching Benenock. He's struggling a bit.
Oh, he's a turnstile when it comes to pass block.
Before the game,
sorry.
I said he was bad football player right now, but it doesn't mean that they haven't shown enough to be the pass blockers for the guy who won NFL Offensive Player of the Week for 2 weeks in a row. Again, this goes back to why I always say don't pay these guys. Don't assume you have to pay these guys. Quan Alexander's part of this crap show defense right in the middle of it. He's made some nice plays, but he's been lost too. And you got Marpet and Smith, and yeah, they got a lot of decisions to make.
You like the story, Ira. Yeah, again, I was in the locker room. I went up to Allie. Allie's always willing to talk no matter how ugly it is. And I walked up to him. Allie got a quick second. And he didn't want to talk. I mean, you could see physically like that. He took a sigh. He goes, "Well, it's you, Lee. I'll talk to you, Lee." And but I could, he I think he wanted to. I think he wanted to have ingrown toenail surgery as opposed to talk to him. But he didn't talk. And I just had one question. Thanks, Allie. I started walking away. All of a sudden, he goes, "Hey, Lee, my parents were real happy about you." I turn around like, "What?"
Well, it's glad somebody's happy about.
Yeah, so, I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "What are you talking about now?" To back up a little bit, Saturday I walked in the lobby. The team had I just checked in at the team hotel. I walked in the lobby. I had a couple of beers because I was out with a buddy.
Beer,
and, yeah. And they, I saw Allie.
The Kempers trolling the Bucks team hotel.
Well, I was standing there. I was standing there.
Is that what I'm get out of this?
Well, I was standing there, so I don't think I was trolling it. I was all standing right, there. So right. I was going back to my room, and I walked into the lobby, and I see Allie there with his family. I just nodded in acknowledgement, like, you know, hi, Allie.
You didn't stalk Casey Phillips, did you?
No.
You didn't stalk.
No, that's a different story.
All right, go ahead.
And as you would say, never mind.
Never
that.
Mind.
That's the setting the table. That I saw him with his family, nodded in acknowledgement, hi, Allie, and kept on my busy way. Well, then Allie, in the locker room, after my one question, because I could tell he didn't want to talk, and he was cool enough to give me an answer, I walked away, and he's like, "Hey, Lee, my parents were happy to see you." I turned around like, what are we talking about? He's like, "They were happy to see there's actually a human being behind Joe Buck's fan."
There you go.
I said, "What do you mean? Like the Wizard of Oz, he walks from behind the curtain?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Okay."
You know, Steve, you make a good point about Steve, potential regime change. Potential.
I didn't make that point.
That is that. Well, I'm talking
There's
about.
There's always potential regime change.
I'm talking about 5-11 right. regime change.
Well, yeah, of course.
You know,
get him out of here,
Lee. What does that mean to Quan Alexander, Marpet, and Donovan Smith? They're all waiting for big paydays with this organization. Things could change.
I want to say that's why they one reason they may have been so glum in the locker room. I mean, they should have been glum. I mean, they got their doors blown off.
That would be a regime that didn't draft these guys. They didn't draft these
yeah,
guys.
They're
going to view them on film and make a judgment. You never know what's going to happen.
I really believe one reason those guys were so dejected is they're wondering about their future. I really believe that. You know, Levante, you think he's a lock here, but as you said, new regime comes in. Oh, wait a minute. This guy's been
a
paragon
of
losing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Donovan's his contract's up. Benenock, who knows? But I really believe that was in the back of their minds, you know, why they were so depressed. Because am I going to be here next?
Steve, we can't lose track of your main point. You said it early in this podcast, and it's probably the most important thing that's been said on this podcast. They're not in bad shape on the scoreboard in the standings. They're not in bad shape, and you got to give Fitzpatrick a lot of credit for that. Munkin's done his job. If I told you they were 2-2 a month ago, you would have been. Buck fans would have been happy.
I would have been
so
too.
So, Steve, what I'm saying is, it's in your hands now. You know, yeah, there's no early
great.
Hole.
It's great. You got two crappy teams coming up.
Go, you know. Now, I wouldn't say Atlanta's. They got crappy defense.
1-3, bad defense. Come on,
bad defense.
Well, let's not play pretend.
Lee, they're not in bad shape. It's in their hands now. Go out there. And
if you have fifth
and win 7 or 8 of your last 12 games, go do it.
I'm stuck in a rut. I don't have any faith this defense is going to get fixed. I hope they fix it. Don't get me wrong. Gosh, I hope they fix it. But I just don't have any faith. I'm hope is gone for me as far as the defense goes.
Ira quickly, Dirk Cutter comes out. He says, "You know what? I've heard about this Mike Smith stuff, and this fire Mike Smith stuff. And I'm not firing Mike Smith. You know he." You got to ask yourself, well, if you fire him, then what? You know, what?
Boy, you got to do better than that. Steve. That's weak. Lee, that's weak. You can't say I'm standing 100% behind Mike Smith.
He didn't.
We got
say
2 weeks
that.
To turn this thing around. I got all the faith in the world that we will make the necessary adjustments and play far better defense over the last 12 games. Did Dirk Cutter say that, Lee, or did I miss that?
No, not only did you not miss that, speaking with just people out in the general public, Cutter said, I won't fire Mike Smith. I'm hung up on the word I. I'm hung up on that. He didn't say Jason Light won't fire him. He didn't say the Glazers won't fire him. I won't fire him. So when everybody said, oh, my gosh, you know, Mike Smith's here for the, oh, my God. I said, whoa. That's a jump on the gun a little bit. He didn't say anything about the people over his head.
Steve, I've been trying to ramp up the pressure in my own little way on ownership. You've read it in the last few weeks, you know, that. You know, they're going to weigh in on the Winston situation, which I think they have. Not that Cutter wouldn't have gone back to Winston for Atlanta. I think he would have, but I think the Glazers are driving the train, and I think Cutter's in agreement. But I'm trying to get the Glazers to drive. Look, you guys have pointed it out. They've done this thing before with a coordinator, maybe not in the middle of the season.
Raheem fired his coordinator in the middle of the season, and not only did he fire his coordinator, he changed the defense. They went from a two-gap scheme to a one-gap scheme. And, hey, you know what? They gelled toward the end of the year. They won 2 out of 3. They beat the playoff team in the Saints late in the year when the Saints needed the game. I mean, come on.
I'm with Lee on this point. We've seen this for 2 years plus, and nothing's really changed.
Yeah.
So where's the faith that things are really going to change after the bye week, Steve? Where's the faith coming from?
No faith, but I still think they're not this bad. So I just think, for me, talent will make some plays to change the tide of the defense. So what does that mean? That means they knock some balls loose and, you know, Kwan has a 2-force fumble game and Justin Evans gets those closer to those 6
Any
picks.
Any concerns about Grimes at this point, Steve? Grimes?
I don't know what's going on. He clearly didn't want to be benched based on some of the stuff Miko's putting out on Instagram. But he clearly wasn't the problem in the secondary per se. So I don't know why Cutter just didn't say, look, he's a veteran. We wanted to get Ryan Smith in there. It's sort of what he said, but then Cutter's like, well, you can speculate all you want. You know,
some fans are suggesting he's done.
Well, I saw some cut-ups. Again, these are very subjective. I saw some cut-ups the week prior, the Steelers game, where Grimes was in position to make a play, and for whatever reason, he didn't.
So first game back from injury.
Exactly. That's getting to my point. Maybe he's just rusty. But, hey, I saw him in training camp go step for step with DeSean Jackson, pick off a ball. I think what you said is part of it. He's just getting back in the flow of things, coming off an injury. A groin injury is no easy thing. And initially, I had a lot of red flags going off that he got benched. But the more I thought about it, and I listened to Cutter's interview, his weekly sit-down with Dan Lucas, and he said how the game was totally out of hand at halftime. Mathematically, there was no way they can come back. And I think he sat Grimes basically saying, look, dude, you're 35. We need you for the long haul. We don't need you to go out and blow an ankle or something in his debacle. Go sit down.
I would assume that's what he did, but it just feels a little weird. I don't know.
It felt a little weird, but that's what I think.
Steve,
that's what
at the quarter poll, I give this pass rush a C-, and I don't think that's good enough.
You know, you're getting to your point. You were asking about you're going to put your pressure on the Glazers. Do you have an unlimited text plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I got a fun one for you. It's just more rhetorical than anything else, Ira. Didn't Dirk Cutter, quote unquote, fire, remove, whatever you want to use, didn't he fire his own offensive play caller this year and install a different guy?
Interesting.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? But you can't do that with Mike Smith, because what are you going to do next? So, and are we to believe that there's no Jeff Tedford plan in the house, where if a coach gets sick, that you can't replace him, that you have to go throw it to Marcus Arroyo again?
Like no contingency plan?
It was, yeah. I mean, it's ludicrous.
It wasn't a ringing endorsement for the other coaches on the defensive side of the ball either. Yeah, you know.
Or Dirk Cutter's own ability to step in as the head coach, because he is responsible for the defense, and help get this thing right. He knows the defense, doesn't he? Yeah, it's very strange, very strange. But we'll see. Ira, take us out of this podcast. What do you the good people need to know?
Lee, I'm going to go back to it. It's all there in front of them if they embrace it. The overall tone of this podcast, because you're coming off a debacle at Soldier Field, which you were part of. You know, you were eating your deep dish pizza and watching guys run wide open. So it's going to be negative. It's going to be negative off that, you know, embarrassment. And Cutter didn't indicate it was anything but an embarrassment. Give him credit. He's honest after these games. Everybody should have been fired. I know that's rhetorical. But it was that bad that you could fire everybody, you know.
It's bad.
So, but at the same time, Lee, you're 2-2. You're not 1-3. You've been 1-3 a bunch of times. You've been 0-4 sometimes, too. You're 2-2. You face some tough competition. The Bears are not a bad team, Lee.
No, they're not.
They're not a bad
defense.
Team. You know, this game in April looked, you know, very winnable, and then all of a sudden, Chicago's 3-1 now. And they could have been 4-0 if they didn't blow the first game against Green Bay. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad team. They run the ball well, and they play stout defense. It's a winning formula. It's a winning formula. So what I'm saying is, you know, amid the gloom and doom, you're 2-2. No excuses. You're injured. So is everybody else. Atlanta's really injured.
Yeah.
Go take advantage of that. You got an extra week to prepare. Go into Atlanta and put a hurting on them and bury them at the bottom of that division and keep your own hopes very much alive.
I'll have to add up what the Bucs allow in the last, I don't know how many dome games under Mike Smith. If Mike Smith can turn this defense around, we're going to know right away. Because that's, I don't know how many string, how many domes, going back 2 years to Arizona. His record in domes, for whatever
and
reason.
And there's nothing wrong with Atlanta's offense.
Wrong with Atlanta's offense. Ridley's starting to get warmed up. And
Freeman's coming back.
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. So we will find out very quickly if Mike Smith has it in him to somehow plug this leak. It's more than a leak. It's a broken dam. To somehow slow down the flow. We'll find out very quickly. And that will be in Atlanta a week from Sunday.
Ira, if the Buccaneers defense, forget about the score of the game, Buccaneers defense allows 38 points to the Falcons, does Mike Smith survive another week?
I didn't think he survived the bye week.
Come on, yes or no, we get out of here. Come on, what is this? Yes
my,
or no?
My answer is simple. He shouldn't.